Great job to Brian spinning the music for us this evening on Coast to Coast AM. Excellent choices. Thank you very much. I'm your host for the evening, Dave Schrader, Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, we're talking about a very interesting case. The book is called It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the Serial Killer You Never Heard Of. Our guest is John Cameron, a 53-year-old retired police detective from Great Falls, Montana. His career in law enforcement began back in 79. He retired in 2005 as Sergeant of Detectives, working cold cases. This isn't some part-time household sleuth that's watched every episode of Quincy and Matlock and fancies himself a crime solver. This man has been a part of the field, has looked at cases, has been involved as a detective in understanding and piecing things together to deduce crimes and who was involved, what happened, and how it went down. We are talking about one of the truly most bizarre crimes and killers I've ever read about. His book is absolutely fascinating. It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the Serial Killer You've Never Heard About. Edwards was a misguided boy who vowed to become the best criminal ever and began a lifelong career of murder, starting at the age of 11, until he was finally captured 66 years later for a crime. And remind me on this now, if you will, please, John. The murder that he was eventually caught for took place in what year?
That was August of 1980 in Jefferson, Wisconsin. A young couple just left a wedding reception and disappeared, and they found their bodies 2 months later in the woods, and they were bound and killed very similarly to the Lake Berryessa killing that the Zodiac Killer did. And so that was kind of the first clue that he could possibly be the Zodiac Killer. And then he confessed to another Lover's Lane murder from 1977 in Ohio. And then he confessed to adopting and killing a young man for $250,000 worth of insurance and beheading him. So he was seeking his death penalty in 2010 by confessing to the crimes he did confess to. And that was his purpose, was once caught, get executed.
But for a man who wanted to be revered and feared, why didn't he admit to more of the crimes openly instead of blogging about them or, you know, sneaking into other websites and making comments and leaving more elusive crimes? You would think that was his time to shine. And if he wanted to be put to death, it was going to happen because of the amount of crimes that he had committed.
He always wanted someone to challenge him, that he was never going to stand up and say, I'm the Zodiac, or, you know, I confess to murder. He said that in a letter to me, that he would never have confessed to murder, other than if it was going to get him what he wanted. By doing it the way he did it, it was on purpose, because it leaves everybody guessing now. But all the clues were out there to be put together if somebody decided to follow his life. And that's what he was looking to do, is get somebody in law enforcement to follow his life after he was caught. So when the bulletin went out in 2010 and I received it about him and his crimes, I just decided that I would write him a letter and ask him if he confessed to killing the young couple in Great Falls here in 1956. And that kind of began my investigation. And that was in June of 2010. He didn't respond to my first letter. And then a friend of mine who was working on the case with me became involved, and we started working on the Zodiac Killer's identity cipher, a letter that the Zodiac Killer sent in 1969 that he claimed when solved would reveal the real name of the Zodiac Killer. And the cipher in that letter was 13 characters, and the name Edward Edwards was 13 characters. And once my friend cracked that cipher, we confronted Edwards again in a letter as to being the Zodiac Killer. And it was shortly after that he started responding with us, and we became correspondents, I would guess you would say, he and I and my friend Neil, for about 8 or 9 months. We wrote letters back and forth, spoke on the phone with him.
And, well, talk me through that when we come back from the break. What was it like to finally confront this animal, this human embodiment of evil? We'll find out more about that when we return to Coast to Coast AM. John Cameron's website can be found at coldcasecameron.com. That's coldcasecameron.com, all one word. You can find all the information, the killer's timeline, a bio on John. You can find links to buy the book. There's video links and so much more of the story. We're talking with our guest tonight for 3 hours. We're going to open up phone calls in the next hour. And I can promise you, we will still not even begin to scratch the surface of this case that is so eloquently detailed in his book. And if you are a true crime buff like I am and you're interested in reading about strange and bizarre crimes, it's me, Edward Wayne Edwards, A Serial Killer You Never Heard Of, is a book you need to pick up. I fully endorse this as just a truly amazing read. You reach out to this man after realizing that you're putting together a puzzle that is quickly representing one of the most heinous killers in American history. Are you nervous about making that initial contact with him? Or, yeah, I mean, walk me through that emotional and mental state for you to do this, because I don't know how I could maintain myself. And I mean, you're an officer of the law, so you've dealt with a lot of dirtbags in your career, I'm sure. But how do you realize that this is just a horrific killer and you're now about to engage him personally?
Yeah, it was a horrible time, actually, those first 8 months when he was alive. And I decided to confront him with letters, because the Zodiac Killer was a letter writer. And I knew that if I was going to get to the bottom of it, and if he was really the Zodiac Killer, then it would be all in the letters. And so when I started sending him letters and confronting him, I decided to ploy not allowing me to talk to him on the phone. He wanted to talk to me on the phone, but I did not want to talk to him right away because I didn't know the whole story. And he kept telling me that in the letters. In fact, in one letter, the first letter I got, he said this specifically, and this was really the catalyst of the investigation. He says to me in a letter, "You say you won the Zodiac game. Good luck. I'll bet I have more answers than you do. I remember a guy in Deer Lodge back in 1956 they called the Zodiac. He killed a guy in Great Falls. I may be 77, but I don't forget things." That was the first letter he sent me when I confronted him about being the Zodiac Killer and the killer of Kalitsky and Bogle, the young couple on the Lover's Lane. And he admitted to knowing more answers and to being in Deer Lodge prison, and that really was the essence of the Zodiac case. In the Lake Berryessa attack, the Zodiac Killer told his victim that he had been in Deer Lodge prison, and that really was the essence that I knew that Edwards was the Zodiac, and this was very early on in the investigation. So I ployed not answering his phones, but my friend Neil, who was involved in this, did answer the phones. And so we kind of worked them. I sent letters, Neil spoke on the phone, Neil would send letters. We wanted to get as much of his writing and as much of the story in writing as we could. And then I wanted to confront him in an interview. And I did that.
Why did you want his writing? Why did you want handwritten letters?
It came pretty clear early on that he was a letter writer. I mean, he says it right on the front of his book. And if he's a writer, like he says, and he's the Zodiac Killer who is a letter writer, then those would be the evidence. The letters would be the evidence. And it turned out the letters were the evidence. Every letter that came was a little bit different style of writing. He would change it up, and he would have certain words either crossed out or highlighted or just clues throughout the letters that I didn't know the story, and you better read your letters if you want to figure it out. And so that's really what it came down to, were the letters were a game by him to tell us that we didn't know the story, but he couldn't write blatantly in those letters because the prison officials were reading them. And a lot of it was in code, and that's what prisoners do. When I work in Deer Lodge Prison for the parole board, I mean, prisoners write in code in everything they send, and that's kind of what Edwards was doing in his letters. But some of the conversations that my friend Neil had with him were definitely leading us to believe that we certainly didn't know the whole Zodiac story, that the Zodiac killings were not just 1968 to 70, but had been going on for decades.
to think that you're actually engaged with this man now. You're talking to him, you're communicating, you're one-on-one with a killer. You know, this character is no longer a literary character or I don't mean that in an ignorant sense, but I mean, you know, you're looking at it all on paper at this point and kind of following these stories. And it's kind of one thing to read about it and research it than it is to actually engage it. And he seemed to love playing with you and
He did. He loved playing with everybody. And the conversation, the 30-minute interview I had with him in January of 2011, I had the worst feeling throughout that whole interview that I'm so glad I didn't speak to him earlier, because he was a guy that was in control of everything. And you could tell the way he talked and the way the interview went that he was in control, and he wanted to make sure that I knew that, and he wanted to make sure that it was always about the setup. That really was the essence of what he wanted to tell me in that interview, was that I may have been right about some of the murders and all that, but I didn't know the whole story, because the Zodiac Killer was the judge, jury, and executioner. He would set people up, steer the evidence towards innocent people, and get those people executed. And that's what happened in 1955 down in San Francisco. Edwards had stolen the San Francisco, Berkeley area, April 28th, 1955, kidnapped a little 14-year-old girl named Stephanie Bryan, wrote a ransom note that it is almost identical to the Jomini Ramsey ransom note, planted the body at a guy's cabin, set the guy up, and the guy was executed in 1957 while Edwards was sitting in Deer Lodge Prison. That's why the Zodiac was the executioner, when he wore the executioner's hood at Lake Berryessa and told them he had been in Deer Lodge. He was in Deer Lodge while Burt Abbott was being executed in San Francisco for a killing he didn't do. And then Edwards returned to that area the rest of his life and killed kids, women, children, men, as revenge.
You look at the pictures you've got of this guy up on your site. He looks like, you know, your uncle. He looks like the guy down the street. He doesn't look like an insane guy. He's got a very warm smile. You know, even on the To Tell the Truth video, which is on Coast to Coast AM, if you go there and look at tonight's show, you'll see related video 1 and 2. We actually put up, and I think it's about an 11 to 12 minute video of when Wayne Edwards appeared on To Tell the Truth. Aside from being kind of cocky and smarmy, he still looks like everybody's got a relative that looks like this guy. Was that kind of disarming for you to realize that here he is, this killer, and he doesn't have the Charles Manson crazy eyes? He doesn't look like he would be this ice cold killer. He's a father of 5, 6 with the unknown child that he was unaware of. How do you process that?
Well, that's exactly how he was able to pull it off, is because he was so smooth, and he was two people. With his family, he was a completely different person than he was when he wasn't around his family, and he wasn't around his family very often. He was always gone. His ruse would be to portray himself as either a criminal investigator, a preacher, or a doctor of psychiatry, and he had all of the credentials to prove that's what he was, and the assumed identity, so nobody ever knew who he really was. But he was very charming, and he could get into his victims and get his victims to come to him. And he was able to do that all the way since 1946, when he got little Suzanne Dignan to climb out her bedroom window at night while her parents slept and took her down the basement and dismembered her. That's how good he was. He got every one of his victims to come to them, and they didn't know that they were about to be killed.
Now, you've talked about the handwriting. We talk about how this killer, all the way from the lipstick killer through the Black Dahlia to the Zodiac to even the JonBenet Ramsey case, there were notes, there were messages, there were taunts, there were letters sent to police, there were ransom notes left, there were things that were done. Did the handwriting actually match? I mean, I personally can change my handwriting and have it look nothing like my normal handwriting, and I could probably write in 2 or 3 different styles so that letters and the way I write words and the slant and everything is enough off that it could look like multiple people. And you would think a man that intelligent wouldn't tie that many together by writing the same way. What did you find in the handwriting analysis?
That's exactly how he did it, is that he would change up his handwriting, but his phrasing was always similar. I found four ransom notes, a ransom note from 1946, 1956, 1996, and 2008, that were all authored by Edwards, that when you read them all, and they were all in the book and on my website, that you will see that it's the phrasing that this man does, and that in every one of the ransoms and the kidnappings, the people were already dead. There was no ransom. The note wasn't even real. It was a parable story of the killer's life, and that's what his ransom notes were, just like the Zodiac letters. The ransom note in the Jomene Ramsey case was a parable of Edward Edwards' life and contained so much information in there that tied to him. But that kind of tied it all back to the other ransom notes he wrote in 56, 46, and 2008.
With that kind of evidence, taking it to law enforcement officials and showing them that letter after letter looks exactly the same and that they all state the same kind of deal and that each one has been written in the same way, why are other law enforcement agencies not looking at this more seriously?
Well, that's really the purpose of the book that I wrote. I never intended to write a book. In fact, I'm not a very good writer. I'm a cop. We write fairly different. And it just became to the point where nobody could wrap their minds around what this guy did unless it was all put into a document so they could read it and see it. And that's what the book ended up becoming. It's more of an investigation. And I've spent the last 2 months traveling the country, bringing that book to the police that I've spoken with, to the prosecutors I've spoken with, to the family members, and giving it to them and letting them have it first, because that's the essence of the investigation, is the book. There's so many hundreds of thousands of pages of documentation I have, I couldn't possibly cover everything in the book, but what I did is try to narrow it down to the biggest crimes of recognition that this man did throughout his life, but there's going to be many, many more.
We will open phone lines here at the top of the next hour, and you can be a part of the show and talk directly with our guest. Ask him the questions that you're inundating my mailbox and Facebook and Twitter with. We'll give you the opportunity to weigh in this evening and share your thoughts and concerns and questions, of which we have some great ones. You know, when we come back, and one thing I do want to mention, a gentleman emailed in and wanted to know specifically about the Black Dahlia murder and the little girl in Chicago. The Black Dahlia murder, one of the things that they said was so fascinating about it is that the murder was done in a way that it was precision cuts, that it had to be somebody with some sort of medical training or background, which George Hodel certainly had and would have fit that case. But Ed Edwards would have been, what did you say, around 13 years old at that time?
Yes, he was. And he actually had been, just prior to him doing that crime, he was on a farm up in Pennsylvania from the orphanage and had learned to dissect animals. And he actually dissected little six-year-old Suzanne Dignan first and then the Black Dahlia a year later. He was an artist with a knife, and he actually used a scalpel on the boys in the park in 1955 in Chicago. That really was, he was very good at dismemberment.
What a horrible skill to be good at, I guess. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. I've got more questions. We've got more story to reveal. And what was the final outcome for this heinous murderer? Did he finally get his lethal injection that he was hoping for? Did he make any more admissions to crimes? We'll find out from our guest right after this. If you've enjoyed what you've heard tonight on Coast to Coast AM, then join me Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight on darknessradio.com as we explore the strange and supernatural. And Tuesday nights are dedicated to True Crime Tuesdays. We investigate strange crimes, unusual stories, and mysteries. You can find all the information and our free archives by visiting darknessradio.com. As a matter of fact, you can join there right now and be a part of our live chat room right on the front page. All you have to do is go check out darknessradio.com. You can sign in using your Facebook or Twitter account, or just sign in as a guest. It says it's Phil. Just refresh your page and you'll be able to get right in and be a part of the room along with many other like-minded individuals. Again, check out our website for more information, darknessradio.com. We'll be back with more Coast to Coast AM right after this. John Cameron is a retired sergeant of detectives who worked on cold cases. He's the author of the book, It's Me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. You can find more information about our guest at his website, coldcasecameron.com. We'll keep dabbling in and out of some of these cases during this last half an hour of this hour, and I'm sure it'll be revisited in the next hour. And I got to tell you, from the response I'm getting, the most requested case file that everybody wants to discuss, aside from Black Dahlia, has been the JonBenet Ramsey case. So we'll dig into that a little deeper in the next hour, I'm sure, with many of the callers. But let me talk to you about this. You said that he had this idea, if he ever did get caught, he would just want to be killed and wrap it up. He didn't want to linger in prison, didn't want all of the regular things that would go on. As a matter of fact, he was so adamant about it, he started giving them crimes until they found one where they could put him to death for it. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's exactly right. The crime that he first got caught on, the 1980 Jefferson, Wisconsin Lover's Lane killing, he got life in prison, but they did not have the death penalty in Wisconsin. So then he decided that he would confess to killing a couple in 1977 in Ohio on a Lover's Lane, and found out that in 1977, Ohio had put a hold on the death penalty because of a Supreme Court ruling. So he just confessed to another murder and didn't get his execution, and he was pretty angry. Some of the letters that he wrote to the police are in my book. So then he decided that he would confess to the 1996 execution of a 22-year-old man named Danny Law Glockner. And Danny was kind of mentally slow, and Edwards adopted him, insured him, convinced him to go into military, and then convinced him to go AWOL and killed him in a cemetery in 1996. That's the same year of JonBenet Ramsey. He beheaded him. He denied the remains of Danny to the family that year and hid his remains for a year until he decided when he would plant them so he could recover the $250,000 insurance he had gotten on him. So he did that crime in 96. That he had confessed in 2010. That got him his death penalty, and he was scheduled to be executed August 31st, 2011.
When he was doing this and wanted death, again, we kind of asked, why didn't he start, you know, putting himself in the position to publicly announce he did JonBenet Ramsey, he did Chandra Levy, he did John F. Kennedy, whatever cases that you're able to tie him into. I mean, why didn't he just come up with him at that point? The JonBenet Ramsey case, especially, there was nobody rotting in jail for it. Why not take that case? You had to know that people wanted somebody to die for that case. That would have seemed like a much easier jump for him to be a part of.
You know, and I'll always go back to he was never going to do that. But that is why he confessed to the 1996 killing, because it was the same year as JonBenet Ramsey. He beheaded that man. He denied the remains. And those are two items that he had said in the JonBenet Ramsey note that he was going to do to her. He was going to behead her, deny the family the remains. He had done that year to Danny Glockner and collected the $250,000. But what's interesting about Edwards is when he finally went to the media in June of 2010, after he sat in prison for a year and decided what he was going to do, he contacted the media first and sat down with them and gave them a very detailed interview, and you can watch it on YouTube at Geauga County. And a lot of that interview is not on the YouTube, and I wish it was all on there, because he said so many things in those interviews that were clues to be followed, and he was just trying to give it all out there to see if anybody was going to get it. And so when people wonder, why didn't he just stand up and say, I did JonBenet, that would take what he was doing right out of the picture. He was doing crime for recognition. He wanted them to live in infamy forever, and that's really what all these cases have done. They've always been so horrific and horrendous, nobody could figure out why would somebody do this. Well, they were crimes of recognition. And that's what he meant by that when he kept repeating it throughout his life.
He finally was scheduled to be put to death. What was the eventual outcome for Edward Wayne Edwards?
He died on April 7th, 2011 from a diabetic coma in prison in Ohio. I was scheduled to interview him April 10th, and he died April 7th. His mother was born April 1st, April Fool's Day, 1911. He repeatedly killed people during that time period of his April 1st, and his daughter was born and named April, and April was also Easter. He picked and chose when he wanted to die, and he wasn't in very good health when I was corresponding with him, and he felt he would die before his execution, and he did.
Then why put yourself into the position to take, you know, the fall for these other crimes if you were still trying to keep them quiet?
I guess I don't understand that question.
Well, if he kind of knew he wasn't going to survive in prison anyway, but he was looking for a crime that they'd put him to death for, and he didn't want to be real forthcoming. He wanted other people to kind of take the fall for him. If he already thought he was going to die, why did he end up, giving himself up on all these other crimes, do you think?
Well, he wanted to guarantee that he was going to die. He wanted to guarantee that they were going to execute him. If he didn't die of natural causes, he would have been put to death on August 31st. And that's really what his goal was, is to be executed once caught. But he wanted someone to catch him. And that really was what the Zodiac Killer did his whole life, is taunt the police with clues to his identity. And the reason his identity was so important is because his real name was Charles Edward Myers, and they changed his name at the age of 5 to Edward Wayne Edwards, so it always was about his identity. He never knew who he really was. He never knew who his father was, and he didn't even know who his mother was until he was 5 and she came out of prison. So it was always a game of teasing the public, the press, with his identity and puzzles, and you had to beat him, and that's what his family told me. He was a game player his whole life, and he didn't give anything up unless you played the game. And Neil and I played the game for 8 months. And it was a game I sometimes wish I didn't play. It was pretty horrible. But I'm glad that it's finally coming to a close.
Did, in your communications, did he ever threaten you or your safety, either directly or indirectly?
Indirectly, he did. It became to the point where he was trying to divide me and Neil, my partner in this. We were both sending letters, and he wasn't sure if we were both one and the same at first, and that was on purpose. I was trying to screw with him a little bit, and it worked. But in the end, he really latched on to Neil and tried to divide Neil and I, and tried some pretty horrible things. And it was 8 months of the worst investigation I've ever been involved in. When his letters would arrive in the mail, I didn't even want to open them at first. I would actually set them down and wait a day, just wondering what was going to be in the next one, because what I was sending him and what he was sending me back was, John, you don't got the whole story. Keep digging. And he was right.
Did he ever work with any accomplices? Do you believe that he was ever a mentor to any other killers that might have been out there, people that might have been writing to him like you for insights?
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did. And one of the biggest partners, I would say, of Ed Edwards was a guy named Frank Dryman. And Frank Dryman killed a guy in Montana here in 1950 and got thrown in Deer Lodge prison. And when Edwards got thrown in Deer Lodge prison in 56, him and Frank Dryman became friends. Well, Frank Dryman was from Vallejo, California. And Frank Dryman got paroled in 1969, 2 weeks after the first Zodiac killing. And he got paroled down to Vallejo. And Edwards was going to set him up as the Zodiac killer. And that's why Edwards shot his first victim in the Zodiac killings 5 times in the back, because that's what Frank Dryman had done to his victim here in Montana in 1950. Edwards thought Dryman had gotten parole in 1968, but he didn't walk out the doors of Deer Lodge Prison until January of 1969. Therefore, Dryman could not have done the first Zodiac killing. Edwards was out when that one happened. And Frank Dryman and him were both Satanists that practiced Satanism in Deer Lodge Prison, 1955 to 59.
What proof was there that he was a Satanist? I mean, was that public knowledge? Was that just a throwaway reference that he said? Do you think it might have been him just trying to build his own legend?
No, he admitted it, and Frank Dryman admitted it in the interviews I did with him in Deer Lodge Prison. Frank Dryman, in 1969, got parole from the Montana Board of Pardons and went back to Vallejo, right where the Zodiac killings occurred. As soon as he found out that Ed Edwards was trying to set him up, Frank Dryman absconded parole and was never seen again until 2010, when I was working for the parole board. Frank Dryman was found down in Arizona, and he was a black magic priest working a wedding chapel down there. And he was a Satanist. I have no idea if Edwards and him hooked up. I don't think they would have, but they would have worked in conjunction with each other. They were both very sick black magic magicians, I guess you'd call it, based on Aleister Crowley, the occult.
I have an interesting email here from Daniel, and he wants to know Minnesota connections. Jacob Wetterling is one of our most famous cases in 1989. He was abducted and has never been heard of since. On the website that our emailer sent us, said, I saw a letter to the FBI written in 1993, and in that letter he admits to committing crimes in Minneapolis, Minnesota. So what do you make of that? Is there any chance that Edwards may be involved in the Wetterling case, or what cases in Minnesota might he be connected to that you've been able to find?
He was definitely connected to Minnesota throughout his life. He practiced psychiatry there under false identity. Jacob Wetterling never came into the case through any of the evidence that I looked at or through the book or any of that. I was familiar with that case because I'm from Minnesota originally, but it never did come in. But that doesn't mean that it's not a possibility that Edwards could have committed that if there are some things out there. But that case never came in. There was a double murder of two young girls near St. Cloud, I think it was in 1977, that came into the case just a few months ago. And I haven't really spent any time looking into that, but it was two little girls, and they were ritualistically killed near St. Cloud and left for dead. His goal was to kill in every state, and he lists 19 states in a letter that I recovered. A 1993 letter I recovered, he lists the states where he has FBI files on him. And there's 19 states and dozens of cities. Those were the cities where he actually killed in and got spoken to by the FBI. There are many other cities where he killed in and never had a file put on him because they never talked to him.
Most killers, it seems, like to take a token. Was there ever any evidence that you can conclusively tie him to these locations? Like, you know, they found the school ring of one of the victims, or, you know, something along those lines, some type of trophy.
You know, the police searched his house in 2009 after they arrested him. And there was rooms full of stuff that his children threw away. In 2009, when the police arrested him for that 1980 murder, double murder, they didn't have any idea who this man really was. And so a lot of the evidence that was taken in 2009 was gone by the time I got involved in the case in 2010. The family had cleaned out the old house, thrown away a bunch of stuff, but they saved some very important documents that they shared with me. And it was those documents that ended up tying him to being the Zodiac killer and tying him to the West Memphis 3 case in 93. And that's the letter he sent the FBI in 1993. And so a lot of the evidence regarding what has transpired with my investigation, it would make a lot more sense if I could look at it now, but most of it, a lot of it was thrown away or is sitting in evidence rooms in police departments that aren't willing to share it.
With the evidence that you found and stuff that became available to you as an investigator, was there some hidden letters, documents, drawings, things that really kind of connected more of the cases to you and helped put these puzzle pieces together easier?
Yeah, he actually saved a file in his living room. He had a dresser. Nobody was allowed in the dresser. And that, according to his wife, was where he kept his most personal papers. And those were the papers that I got to go through in September of 2010 when I went out and visited. And that's when I recovered some news clippings about him going to the press, claiming he knew the Zodiac Killer, letters to the FBI, which were actually taunts, and then newspaper articles from all over the country where he was running around preaching that he was a reformed criminal. And in fact, what he was doing was preaching at churches and then killing their kids. So I got access to a lot of information, but a lot of it is sitting in Jefferson County, Wisconsin, evidence room, and down in Kentucky, possibly, where he was picked up. But I've never been given access to that.
What is it, Wayne Williams, that's attached to the Atlanta child murders?
Yeah, Wayne Williams was arrested for killing two adults in 1981 down in Atlanta, and then convicted on those two cases. And then after that conviction, the police announced that Wayne Williams was the Atlanta child killer. But shortly after Wayne Williams was convicted in February of 1982 in Atlanta, Edward Edwards was arrested in Atlanta. And he had a police uniform, and he had been down there hiding out using a police uniform to kill the kids in the Atlanta child killings. And I have a picture of him with the Atlanta captain of police.
And do you believe that he was using that police uniform to get to the children in Atlanta?
Yes, many of the cases, that was the suspicion. In 1979, 1980, the Atlanta Police Department just had changed. It was basically an all-white administration department. They changed to an all-black administration department and tried to get more integrated. Edwards targeted that town for that specific reason, to create hatred, and killed 24 little black kids in Atlanta over a two-year period, laying them out ritualistically in church parking lots or police parking lots, or, you know, holding their bodies for days or sometimes weeks and then planting them elsewhere.
Have they tried to clear Wayne Williams of this crime, knowing what you know about this case?
I went to Atlanta last month and I met with the Wayne Williams Freedom Project, and it's just like every one of these cases. Once they're in prison, there is nobody that's going to even acknowledge letting them out unless there's some legal thing to do it. And legally, Wayne Williams has been convicted, has served 33 years. He's innocent. He's even innocent of the two adults that he's accused of killing. And he has no way out unless somebody wakes up and starts looking at the real evidence, because the real evidence in the Atlanta child killer was always there. Edward sent Zodiac letters in the Atlanta child killings, and the FBI had them all this time, but a lot of people didn't know that until recently.
Phone lines open for the next hour. It's me, Edward Wayne Edwards, the serial killer you never heard of. John Cameron will field your calls and questions. Check out the website coldcasecameron.com for more information and order a copy of the book. Stay tuned. We've got more Coast to Coast AM coming up right after this.